Welcome to Sausage on a Fork, a podcast dedicated to the UK's longest-running children's drama programme, Grange Hill. My name's Neil, and in each episode, I'll interview a former cast member about their life before, during, and after their time on the programme. Okay, welcome to the next episode of Sausage on a Fork, and I am absolutely delighted to say that I have been joined by none other than Thomas Carey, who played Alec Jones. Tom, welcome to Sausage on a Fork.
Well, thank you for very much for having me on Sausage on a Fork. I'm very excited to do this interview.
Excellent. Excellent. No need to be nervous. We'll look after you, don't worry. Okay, so what we'll do, Tom, is we'll start the way we start every episode. And if you can tell us how you first got into acting.
Right. Well, how it was is my brother, he's 4 years older than me, and he was auditioned in his secondary school by a youth club called the London Irish Youth Theatre.
Right.
And they came over and they were looking for young actors, you know, to do some plays, some fringe stuff, touring around the place and whatever. So he was doing that, and he'd do it like once during the week, and then he'd go over on the weekends on a Sunday for a couple of hours as well. And I was always wondering, like, what was he doing? You know, I was 11 years old, and I'm like, where's he going? And my mum said, well, you just get rid of him. Just take him with you. He's driving me crazy. You know, just get him out of the house. How much is it? £2 to take the £2. Take him.
Yeah.
So off I was with my brother anyway. Up in there. It was up in Archway, just past St. Joseph's. It was St. Joseph's School in Archway. And we used to go there 2 hours a week. We used to do improvisations, and it was really good fun.
Right.
You know, there was loads of kids my age and older, and it went up to like 18 years old, would say. And after a few months of doing that, auditions started coming in. And I didn't know anything about acting, really. I mean, this is all new to me. 11 years old, Rosemary Kennedy was the head of it, and there was Lillian Bailey. She did the dancing side of things. They did a lot of Irish dancing stuff as well.
All right, okay.
And you'll probably hear my accent slip in and out of England, Irish as I'm talking. When I talk Irish about Irish, I go into an Irish. I don't know why I do it, but I just do. basically what happened then after a while, an audition came in for War of the Buttons, and this is a feature film filmed in Ireland, and I was seen for it up at St. Joseph's, and then they liked me, and they were like, well, we want to see Thomas again, and so they flew me back to Cork for the next audition, which I felt like a superstar. This is crazy. You know? And so I was back there for the day. It was really good. We just did a load of workshops and a lot of improvisations again. And it was a real good buzz. And they flew me back that evening, heard nothing back. 2 weeks later, bam, they said, right, we really like him. We want to offer him the role of so-and-so.
Wow.
So that was great. I was like, wow, it's all a bit much, you know. I have no idea what I'm doing here. I've been acting 6 months, you know, so no clue. Within 2 weeks, they flew us back to Ireland, my mom as well. She came back for the weekend just to get us, you know, broken in, let's say, just to figure it all out, and where we're going to be staying and making sure that they're okay with everything.
Yeah.
But there was only two of us flown over from England, two Irish actors flown over from England for the parts. So we was over there for 2 weeks. Everything was going hunky-dory as far as I was concerned. I was really loving it. Got to meet the stunt directors and got to see all the locations that we were going to be filming.
Right.
Got to try on wardrobe, do all of that. And then one day they just said after lunch, yeah, Thomas, can you wait behind when everyone was getting into the minibus to go off and do rehearsals? And I was like, okay. And they never said nothing, never let on nothing. They said, all right, Thomas, we've booked your ticket. We're sending you back to the UK this afternoon.
Wow.
And I'm like, what have I done? They said, we just think it's best if you go back, blah, 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 blah. And I was like, what?
Wow.
You're not going to give me an excuse. You're not going to give me a reason. And they're like, no, look, we just don't think it's right for you, blah blah blah, and just went on like that. And I'm at this stage now, my heart's dropped out, I'm broken inside, totally devastated. I have to go back to the UK, face my mom, my dad, my family, my friends, everyone that supported me. Everyone's so excited. Now I live in a little block of flats, a Highbury estate, and it's a kind of a community. So everyone knew, everyone's expecting film star Tommy coming out of the Bronx of Highbury, So to let everyone down, I just felt just totally gutted. I came back, faced the music. As you can imagine, everyone was very disappointed, and let's just say I got punished in the sense of, it wasn't severe, but I was locked in my room for a day or two, kind of thing, and just tried to, but that was it, really. My mom wasn't that bad.
It wasn't your fault.
Well, this is, I still to this day don't know what I've done wrong, because I thought they liked me for my cheeky charm and everything like that, because that's basically, I've got most of my roles, my personality. But obviously I must have done something wrong, and they just wouldn't tell me what I'd done, and they wouldn't tell my mom, so nobody knew. My agent wouldn't even, I mean, she wouldn't even talk to me for ages at the time as well. So I had to write these sorry letters to everyone saying how bloody sorry I am for whatever the hell I'd done wrong, and I had no idea what I'd done wrong. Anyway, my agent said, right, I've got you another audition for London's Burning. You better not get in trouble this time, kind of thing. I'm like, whoa. So pressure's on now. But I landed the role, and it was a school kid role, running out of a school shouting fire. It wasn't a massive part, but it was good fun down there with the crew filming with all the fire brigades and the big woo-ha. It was really good fun. So we did that. We went on to do Breed of Heroes, along with my brother, which, not Breed of Heroes, sorry. What was it? No, I can't remember the name of it now. It was only a small little part. It was like an Irish IRA terrorist part. And yeah, so I was landing lots of little roles. And then Graham Chill popped up, and my agent Rosemary said to me, she said, Tommy, she said, this is very important. This could make or break you, basically. So I've got you the script, and you need to go and learn it. And the audition's in a week's time, down at the BBC studios in Shepherd's Bush. And you better get it. So I'm like, okay, pressure's on.
pressure.
So yeah, so my mom now, she was brilliant like that, because she would really like make me learn the lines. She would help me. She would constantly be with me. My mom was great support, that way. And she would make sure I was off the page. And just boosted my confidence, trying to say, Tommy, you've got this, you're fine. I was pooping myself, basically, man. So going in there and seeing all these other kids, and I'm like, oh my God, just be yourself, Tommy. Be yourself. That's what I kept saying in my head. Just be yourself. Be yourself. Be this character, whatever it is, just be yourself. And I went in and I knew all my lines off the page, and I was working along across from some other actors, and they couldn't remember the lines, which is yes. And it's a bad thing, and I feel sorry for them, but at the time you don't. You want the part, and that's that. Sitting down waiting for the next callback, basically, because you sit there and wait to be called in again to do another scene. And yeah, now I just came out of there buzzing, absolutely buzzing, and on the tube on the way home, my mom, I was just so happy and buzzing. And every time I've ever come out of an audition buzzing like that, it's just lo and behold, I've landed the audition, And there's other ones you come out and you're like, didn't do so great at that one, but then I've landed it as well. And I'm like, okay, so I can't just use that as a guideline to say this is how that's how it works, because it doesn't. You could do a great audition, come out buzzing, and never hear of them again, So
And so was it the role of Alec that you auditioned for?
I couldn't tell you now, to be honest, whether it was Alec here himself. But I'd say so along the lines of that. They were looking for a little ruffian, basically, and I kind of fitted that description.
Okay, cool.
Because where I grew up, basically, coming from Ireland, I learned how to do a Cockney accent straight away. So I was like, sweeties and that, you know what I mean? Talking like this all the time.
Yeah.
So I'd go in there giving it all the local lingo and slang and all that sort of stuff. So,
Yeah.
I mean, I was forever doing that in Grange Hill, changing the scripts
Right.
because, you know, we don't say watcher anymore and stuff like that, you
Yeah,
know.
no. So, okay, so you joined then in, well, 95. You would have been filming because it was series 19 in 96 when it went out. So, were you already a fan of the program?
I was. I used to basically my school was up in Archway and I lived in Highbury, so it used to take me 45 minutes to an hour to get home.
Right.
And I would just get in, I'd rush home to get in the door to sit down with a packet of biscuits and a cup of tea, and I'd sit there dipping me biscuits right in front of the telly with my feet up on the chair in front of me, the table there, and just be munching away in
Yeah.
biscuits watching Grange Hill religiously.
Brilliant.
And yeah, I really loved it because it hit topics that you could relate to,
Yeah.
you know, growing up as well, and where I was, you know, part of, let's say, the local flats that I lived in, you know, you can relate to that, and you think, oh yeah, it just became like a ritual, basically, to get
Yeah.
back, get in front of it, watch it,
Yeah. So
and yeah, so I was a big fan.
how was it then going from being a fan to then being with these people that you'd seen on telly?
Well, let's say starstruck, to be
Right.
precise. On the first day of rehearsals, I've got my big blue script, you know,
Yeah.
and the rehearsal, with you go in and do the read through with all the actors, and I'm sitting around, and we'd have all these tables, all these chairs, sitting around in a circle, and everyone had introduced themselves, and I'm just waiting around to find out just that person there next to me, and I've got to say my name, say it out loud, don't fuck this up. And you say your name and the character you're playing, and you know, and then you just, because I'd memorized my part, but I hadn't obviously memorized the whole script,
Yeah, all right, okay.
so I had to just make sure that I was reading the page before my part. So when my part came, I'd read the lines, and
Yeah.
because I suffered from dyslexia,
Right.
that's why I need to be off the page. I still to this day need to be off the
Yeah.
page. I don't like sight. I can sight read now. With a lot more confidence, but I still prefer to be off the page, you know.
Yeah.
And yeah, so it was scary to say the least, seeing everyone, and you could see them all dotted around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Okay. So you, when you joined then, the year group you went into, it was their second year, it was year eight. And Alec was supposed to be like an established pupil already. It wasn't like here's a new boy. He was already there. And he was there as one of Wayne's mates, whether he was a sidekick or muscle or stooge or whatever you want to, whatever you
Sidekick, muscles, yeah, all of
want.
them.
Well, the first time we see Alec is he's on the bus with Wayne and Robert was the other one, wasn't it? And they were giving Poppy grief and then asking Kevin if he still had Wayne's air gun. And Kevin got it out on the bus, but Wayne wouldn't take it back. And
The pellet gun, wasn't it?
then there was all that bit where he had it in Kevin had it in school and Wayne kept asking for it at times when Wayne knew he would get Kevin into trouble, and then there was all that thing where Kevin accidentally shot Sarah Jane in the arm. And Alec and Robert at this time were convinced that they were going to get in trouble, but Wayne wasn't. Which, when you look at the way Alec and Robert were later on, it's quite it was a bit it's very different to what they were like sort of later on towards Wayne. And obviously Kevin did get in trouble with it and told the police that he'd found it in a bush. And didn't sort of tell on Wayne. Now, when you first went at that time, because Alec didn't really get his own sort of storyline, did he? Was he, as you say, he was always
No, I was more of a su supporting.
right.
I was more a supporting actor kind of thing. I had a couple of little lines here and
Yeah.
there, but it was quite small to start off with, I remember. Equally amazing.
Yeah,
I mean, it didn't
definitely.
matter. The fact that I was there, you know, that's all that
Yeah.
meant anything to me. I'm on telly. This is awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, that was. I think that was just getting me established, getting me on the scene, kind of thing, or my character Alec Jones on the scene. And Sam Powell played Robert. Basically, he we used to get a taxi in together every day. Yeah. Very nice chap, very quiet in real life, as opposed to his character. You know, he was kept himself to himself. Yeah, we kind of pallied up, didn't we? And we kind of did our own thing.
Yeah, because there's a bit where. And it was a really strange thing that for some reason they decided to split the science class into lads and girls. And he was saying about I think it was the girls weren't achieving as well, or the lads weren't achieving as well in science. So they were splitting it that way. And Alec basically blamed Wayne because he was the worst one for messing about. And Wayne pushed past Alec. And this is the first time where we sort of see Alec sort of not being that stooge where he grabs older Wayne and pushes him up.
Outside
said,
in the playground.
Yeah, you can't push me around. We're not girls, is what they say. Like, and it's showing that maybe they didn't think Wayne was as hard as he'd always let on. He'd always had that front, hadn't he? And then what I love this bit towards the end of that series is when they're doing the musical of Grease and. Robert and Alec are getting talking about getting tickets to go. When at first I'm like, those two lads wouldn't be interested in going to see a play, but it's when they hear the rumor that Cecile's going to be wearing next to nothing in the final scene.
Yeah.
So they end up getting tickets.
I mean, how true to real life is that?
Yeah, no. But then they walk out and.
I mean, that's what kids did. That's what youngsters, like teenagers, did. And stuff definitely, like that, you know?
Definitely. But you hear, as they're walking out of school, you hear Alex say, well, that was a waste of money. She had loads of clothes on. And I just think, never mind, lads. Now, so then that moved us on nicely to the next series, which was series 20. And in year 9, and you didn't seem. Alec and Wayne sort of weren't together really that much anymore. But at the start of that series, Alec was wearing an earring and he got pulled up by the staff for wearing it. Was that...
Yep, put a hole there.
Was that your idea, was it, to be wearing that?
A lot of the ideas I had a say in. Phil had me up in the office many, many times talking with whoever was directing, you know, the next episode, and we'd be discussing my character, and you know, different things like the boxing and all sorts of different things that I contributed towards, which I found. Put it this way, I went back to Ireland, and every summer, I mean, the latest thing in Ireland at the time was having an earring. So I was like the summer holidays. I'm getting an earring. So I got an earring and I came back to Grangehill with my ear pierced. So that was it then. They had to write in a storyline about the ear piercing and stuff like that, you know, because all of a sudden I've got a hole in my ear. Because I wasn't too up on continuity.
Okay. So then there's a bit where it's the Human Rights Day and Kevin is locked in a cage representing, I think it was a political prisoner. So they were doing that. And Alec's on the top of the cage pouring a drink over Kevin and saying, getting wet, where's your umbrella and all that type of stuff. But then Sarah Jane comes down and she drags Alec off the top and pushes him up against the wall. Now, when I watched that, you looked genuinely terrified of Sarah Jane.
You don't mess with a tough chick, you know. I brought up never to hit girls, you know. So
it's either brilliant acting or you were genuinely terrified of Laura Hammer. You don't need to answer that one, by the way. That's fine. We'll move on there. But then there was the thing, because Kevin was in the cage and some of the older lads had motorbikes, and you see Alec sort of sniffing around the motorbikes and you think he's going to try and nick one of the bikes, but he actually just takes the lock to lock Kevin in the... Poor old Kevin got it, didn't he? he just put it on the cage.
He did. We tortured little Kevin. He did. Bless him.
Well, that's what bullies do, isn't it? They go for the little ones, don't they? And
Well,
then,
yeah, the ones that can't fight back, you know.
yeah. And then I was saying before about like the fact that Alec and Wayne didn't tend to bother with each other much. And it sort of happened a little bit with Roberts as well. And Alec sort of became a bit more on his own because they were all talking about going around to Kevin's one night. Alec walked over and was like, what were you talking about? And they all went, oh, nothing. Nothing, it doesn't matter, and walked away.
Yeah.
And it was like they just didn't want to be his mate anymore. And I think because maybe they were growing up and Alec wasn't quite growing up, I don't know. Because Wayne had become a bully counselor and Alec was like, what do you want to do that for? And then he said, I can provide you with some clients if you want as well. And because he was sort of on his own at this point, you know, he'd started charging lads 50p to go to the toilet, you know, with the toilet tax.
Yeah, I remember that.
And at this point is when the Double Dare Gang started up, which was like quite a, you know, a really popular thing in Grange Hill. And one of them had a dare to get Alec back, basically. And she got a bowl of custard. Don't know if you remember this one. And she had to throw the custard in Alec's face. Was that only one take, or did you have to do more than one?
I can guarantee you it was a lot more than one take.
Right, okay.
It was fresh for the very first take, and then it was painted on, it would go hard and it would crack, and then I'd have to go and have lunch with this hard cracked custard on my face, and then come back, and then makeup would just put on some fresh more custard from a different angle, and there are all these different shots, and then it was, people forgetting their lines, and all sorts of different reasons. Go, cut, start again. That is definitely imprinted in my memory as a day to remember of filming Grange Hill, I have to say.
you earned your money that day.
Yeah. definitely. Yeah. I enjoyed it. I mean, it was fun.
Yeah.
For the first half of the day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the thing with that was he didn't know who it was because they all had the red caps on. So they'd be all scarper and he wouldn't know who it was. But that sort of aligned a long time where we see Alec doing boxing training as well. Was that something that you did?
Yeah. I did boxing for several years back in Ireland before I came over. And then when I came over, with the Islington Boys, and then at the ABC down in Angel, I enjoyed boxing. It was great. I did. So we'd say on average over the years, around about 6-7 years of boxing, and I just thought it'd be a good idea, just something different, I suppose. I was always being asked, I mean, what do you think of your character? What do you think you should bring to it? And I said, oh well, I do a bit of boxing and I do a bit of this, and they were like, oh, right, okay.
Yeah.
So they brought in the boxing, and that was fun.
Yeah.
Put me in front of he was semi professional boxer originally, and it was kind of it was a case of because the insurance wouldn't let you do anything.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I wasn't allowed to let loose or so it was all, very choreographed.
Yeah, yeah.
But once again, I felt really special because it was something that I had contributed. Yeah. So it was my idea.
And it is you in the ring in that fight as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's not like it's not no stunt doubles there.
No doubles, no.
Brilliant. Okay. So the only thing with that storyline, and it's something that it was a real bugbear of mine when I was at school, was that the kids who were like Alec, the teachers always seemed to have. There was always at least one teacher that seemed to like them horrible kids. Like Die Hard, Mr. Jones offered to help him with his training. At first, it's like, why is he doing that? Because you see him do quite a bit of training with him, but then he says later on, doesn't he, well, he's not really a bad kid. And it's like maybe he was trying to like change him a bit and, and like look out for him and try and think, well, if I can get him to do that, then maybe we can change him. And like I say, when I was a kid and you saw teachers like that with those kids, you didn't tend to realise that that's what they were trying to do. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
And it is.
Well,
is.
They saw a light in them. They saw a soft side, basically.
Yeah.
And then it takes one conversation.
Yeah, definitely. It does. Yeah. So, yeah, it's like, yeah. like Like I say, at first, you're like, why are you doing that? Because that would have really wound me up. But he was just trying to look out for him. Whether it worked or not is a completely different thing. And then after that, Alec found the red cap and started thinking about who'd attacked him with the custard. And then he saw the red cap in him. Oh, poor Matt. Poor Matt, I've got
doing
it for
my
Alec,
detective
didn't he?
Work.
Yeah. He saw the red cap in Matt's locker and accused him of throwing the custard at him. And then Alec, but then Speedy came to his defense, didn't he? Tom came and went for him to leave him alone. But then Mr. Jones came and saw them and said, look, boys, sort it out civilized. And that's when Alec said to Speedy, we'll do it civilized, we'll do it in the ring. And he turned up, got in the ring, but and this lad who's three times the size of him standing opposite him in the ring, he saw the light and ran out the ring, didn't he? Now again, so that must have been nice for you as well to be doing that when it was your input again, like in your day in the gym. Was it an actual gym?
It all felt surreal. It felt really surreal. I mean, it felt amazing. I felt like a king in a sense. I was like, being a bully and getting away with it, and these characters, I'm proper playing a hard nut, and it's a strange one, because I mean there's a lot of relation to Alec Jones as what I was going through growing up,
right?
Because once that was aired, and after the second series, all of a sudden everyone's starting to know me as Alec Jones, I had a lot of run-ins with people that are saying, you think you're hard, do you? Yeah, you think you're tough? Come on in, mate. And I'm like, you do realise it's acting. There was a lot of that growing up. For me, it was to play the characters. I thought they're the most exciting parts, aren't they? That's just brilliant. I mean, just getting up to all sorts of devilment and getting away with it.
Yeah.
Or not.
But
getting away with it because you're playing a character,
Yeah, but then that little gang, the Double Dare gang, they contributed to the first real trouble that Alec got into, where they were hanging the model of Mrs. Holmes off the roof. Tom was up on the roof, and
that's right.
Alec turned up for a smoke, and told Tom to get lost, and then he pulled the model up. And as he turns around, Mrs. Holmes and Mr. Robson were both there, and he was banged to rights, really, because he wasn't the type of kid that would have grasped on someone either, was he, Alec? It didn't matter who it was.
He was a street kid, proper street. Yeah.
And he did get excluded. Now, I've got to ask you about the smoking, because obviously you're saying about doing the boxing and all that. Were you smoking at the time anyway?
Yeah.
Right,
I was.
Okay. Right, okay. I just thought that check was.
Yeah.
It's not always. It's just sometimes people aren't like, because I know when I spoke to Lee MacDonald, who played Zamo. Obviously, his character had the thing with all the drugs, and he was a boxer and all clean living and didn't touch anything. Like, so I was just going to see what that was there.
Yeah,
okay.
No, I was the opposite.
So yeah, like you say your life mirrors Alec Jones, didn't you? You were saying there a lot.
Pretty
of
much,
was
I was I was pretty much very much like my character. Yeah.
Okay, so moving on then to series 21, and it's probably when you had. You, the biggest sort of storyline that you were involved with. You moved into year 10, and before the big thing kicked off, what I liked was that the police turned up at school because an office had been vandalised. And what I like about that is the copper turns up and he knows Alec. And I just really... They're just let us know that Alec's got a bit of form there. He knows him. But then obviously we talked earlier about like the fact that Wayne and Alec had drifted apart. But then this new kid, Sean, came to the school, and it was evident
Ian
that
Roberts,
it was evident that they already knew each other, wasn't it? Because there was no sort of introduction with Sean. He was just there all of a sudden. It was like he had come to the school, but he knew Alec from outside. Now, do you know what? This friendship, I love this friendship at first, because it's so different to what it was at the end, because it was just two lads, the fact that Alec fancied Judy, and and Sean was trying to get him to talk to him, and they were just having a laugh. And it was like, when I watched it for research, I was killing myself laughing just the way they were with each other. When they went to watch her do the roller hockey, practicing the roller hockey, and Sean said to Judy, Sean said, Judy's got to notice you. And it was just like two lads just having a chat, because he says, you've got to notice her. You've got to look at her. And he goes, well, Alex says, what if I get caught? And Sean's like, what do you mean? And he said, well, what if I get caught looking at her in the changing rooms? And he's like, no, I don't mean that. I said, Sean says, I think you'll get a bit further if you look at it with her clothes on, just to begin with. But again, like earlier on, I said, it was like the other kids were sort of maturing and Alec wasn't. You know what I mean?
That's exactly what it was, basically.
That sort of point. But the partnership was just great. And like, as I say, when she was practicing the roller hockey, Sean says to Alec, try and look attractive. So like, Alec throws his coat over his shoulder, and he's there trying to look cool. And I just wish that had gone on for longer, because the pair of you together, like it was really funny watching the pair of you together. Seems to have quite a good dynamic.
Chemistry. Together, like.
Yeah, I mean, what was he like, Ian? Because I mean, Ian's a cracking actor anyway. But you know what?
He is. Like? He's a great actor, but we didn't click. Let's say start with, because he came in, you know, guns blazing.
Right.
You know, this is who I am, and this is what I do, and you know everything like that. And I'm like, look, this is who I am, and this is my show.
Yeah.
Who the fuck do you think you are? Kind of thing. Excuse my language. So my attitude was very, very rivalry attitude. Right. But yeah, we still had to play opposite each other, you know, as friends. So although we were polite enough, off the set to one another, we got on for the sake of getting on.
Yeah.
You know, but it was just young. We were young, and I mean, he's a lovely chap. I mean, met him years afterwards as well, and I'm like, what the hell are we doing? But for me, it was just it was more. It was a rivalry thing. It was like, don't come in here and think you can run the show. You know? And it was hard being nice to him.
It's okay, but that
at the start,
right?
Because of his confidence in himself.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. He was confident and cocky and. So was I. Right, so
just a clash, basically.
Pretty much, you know what I mean? Like, if we met in the streets, it probably would have been a different kind of thing. In that, do you know what I mean? But, we got on then after a while. I mean, it was, for me, it was just a rivalry thing.
Not right, like, okay.
Who you are kind of thing, so.
Yeah, okay. So, I mean, a lot of this, like, the thing was trying to get Judy to notice
that Alec.
And a lot of it was like that. And at first, you're not really sure why Sean's going out of his way to do that. And then it becomes apparent the fact that he doesn't like the fact that Wayne wasn't really scared of him, or the fact that Judy just wasn't giving Alec any attention at all. Because even like there's the bit where she's practicing the roller hockey with Colin, and Sean and Alec gave Matt a note and said, go and give that to the girl practicing roller hockey. And it was basically a note saying to go to the cafe after school. Now, Sean and Alec were in there. Judy turned up with Colin. And Sean and Alec got off. And then when Colin walked Judy to the bus stop and then walked home, and we saw Sean watching him. And the next thing we know, Colin's been beaten up really, really quite badly. But like,
he was a bit of a snake, Sean.
He was.
His character was really, you know, he was a gangster, let's say.
Like
a mafia gangster kind of style, you know. He'd smile to your face and stab you in the back.
Yeah. I mean, because there was loads of things with it, like the fact that Judy thought Matt had given the note from Wayne. So it was Wayne that had given her the note, mm-hmm. and He went to that. They had that fashion show, which became like a disco, like a rave. And that was when Sean first told Judy that Alec fancied her. But Judy's response was, well, you must be joking. But Sean there then went and said to Alec, oh, yeah, she's definitely interested. You know what I mean? And it was just he was just staring.
Trying to boost my confidence.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's what it was. That's all it was.
Staring everyone.
It wasn't for my benefit.
No. It was his own little game, wasn't it? Like.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And then that just escalated to the fact.
To the point of knives.
To the point. And that was it. And all the knife crime came in. And like Grangell hadn't done that before. And then we always say about the fact that it was so groundbreaking. And to have stuff like that in a kids' TV program was just unreal.
Well, if you see, the Grangehill was a London-based school, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, I mean, that type of stuff, still today, it's still going on in lots of schools in London. You know, knife crime is high. But we didn't have social media like they do nowadays. But I mean, that was highlighting the stuff that was actually happening. I mean, in the areas I grew up in.
Yeah.
You know, the schools I went to, there was knives, there was everything like that. So you could really relate to with the character. I could relate to the character and the part playing. And you could see that any audience that was watching, especially in the London area, can easily relate to it because it was happening all around them.
Well, then, because there's that scene where Wayne and Judy are walking home and it becomes apparent that they're getting followed. It's raining. And Wayne walks back to the cafe and he gives Judy his coat to wait for him in the rain.
Yeah, because it's
raining. And when he gets back, the gang that were following him had slashed their face because they thought it was Wayne because of the coat.
Yeah.
Now,
mistaken identity.
Yeah. And Sean and Alec, like the next day, was going around the school. And Sean and Alec acted like they didn't know anything about it. When the police stopped them, Sean says, oh, well, and the police told him someone had been attacked. It was Sean says, well, how is he? And he said, who? And he said, the lad that was attacked. And he said, I never said it was a lad, it was a girl. And then he sort of realized then. But he still stayed quiet about it, didn't he? And acted like he didn't know anything about it. And you would have thought at that point, Alec might have said something here. But obviously, Sean had that hold over him, didn't he? Because he was a clever lad, Sean. So he knew
this is it.
Play the game, like.
Yeah, I mean, you couldn't trust the guy either. No. So, I mean, he had that on me, on Alec. And, although Alec is meant to be the hard nut, obviously he's now he's screwed, really.
Yeah, yeah.
But
and
he's
then
in trouble now.
That all led to all sorts of things with Wayne and Alec having the occasional punch up. And
because, Wayne would be blaming me anyway, wouldn't he?
But Judy had said to Wayne, look, I don't want you to have a fight. But Wayne still went, but then walked away from the fight. And, I mean, you did get a few kickings off Wayne, to be fair. Like, you did take a few pastings every now and again. Like, and then that then led to the major bit with the drugs. Poor Matt again was the stooge here, and they made him plant the drugs on Wayne, and Wayne was found with the drugs and expelled from the school. But Wayne was determined to clear his name. Judy was determined to clear his name. And they find Judy got hold of the videotapes from the CCTV. And they realised, they found was that Matt had done it. But then Sean managed to swap the tapes over again, try and cover his tracks. And... as you say, when he
it's
did
like
get
something you get in a movie, isn't it?
Well, when he did get expelled, that's what Sean said to Wayne. Alec said to Sean, "I would have preferred to do it my own way." And in the end, In the end, Judy persuaded Matt to go and tell Mr. Robson what had happened, and the police were called to the school, and there was a chase then, and Sean was caught and arrested. Obviously, Alec was arrested as well. But Sean blamed Alec straight away. And that's when you think he wasn't really his mate. He was just someone he could manipulate. Alec wasn't he?
That's exactly it. He was a snake.
Yeah. And then so Alec told the police everything. and we didn't see Sean again after that. Now, all on in that vein, whenever I'm putting a new episode of the podcast out, I do a guest-to-guest competition. I do picture clues, and people guess. That's to try and guess who it is that's going to be coming on. And the first person to guess it right gets to ask a question. So the question is from someone on Twitter, and it's KP Port New 1987. That's his username. I'm very sorry, I don't know your real name. But his question is, deep down, do you think that Alec was a good person? And do you think he was just misunderstood and very easily led?
I think Alec had a, let's say he had a bad upbringing. Right. I reckon he was a victim himself, personally. Uh-huh. And as the old saying goes, hurt people hurt people.
Yeah.
And I think he was neglected by his dad and so forth, and yeah. And you know, probably seeing his dad be violent towards probably his mom and stuff, yeah, like that, and he ended up living with his dad because his mom probably ran away,
yeah,
and stuff. So being neglected, basically, yeah. And I think he was a little hurt soul, and
yeah,
he didn't. I mean, bullying is one thing, but I mean, there's good in everyone in that sense, and you know, you could see that in the character. Yeah. He wasn't always bad. I mean, you could see the way he was around Judy. He genuinely had genuine, you know, feelings for her, and he was soft towards her. And
yeah,
you know, he started to soften up later on as you see the character he does. Yeah. But yeah, he definitely was Scott, let's say.
So you just mentioned there then about his dad. Now that moves us nicely onto the next series, which is series 22. And you were only in six episodes in this one. And that was obviously, it all led to the fact that, you know, Alec was on community service and they were trying to help. He wanted to go back to school. They were trying to get him work. And he went to the interview. Alec turned that job down. And that's when there's a big argument then with his dad.
Yeah.
And his dad basically kicks him out then, and he has to he's looking for places to stay, and he keeps turning up at the school, and then
because I think that's all he knew. I mean,
yeah,
the school was basically his life.
Yeah,
you know, whatever few friends, even whether it was, you know, Sean or whoever, they, I mean, that school, the teachers, you know, Mr. Die Hard, basically all of him, these people, that it was all he knew.
Yeah,
it was the only place he could go for comfort. And so when you take that away from him, and plus his dad's kicked him out, so he's got, where's he going to go now? He's got nowhere to go, has he?
Yeah, I mean, no? And he wanted to get back into the school, and he had the meeting with the governors and all that, and he apologized for everything he'd done. Apologized for everything he'd done. And he just wanted to talk to Judy. He wanted to protect her. He wants to look after her.
Mm-hmm.
But the governors weren't happy that he'd been on the school grounds when he wasn't supposed to, and broke the. And Alec basically, being Alec, stormed off, walked out.
Lost the plot.
Yeah. But then he went back to the school again. But he went back to the school. And he saw Mr. Robson, but still thought he was getting nowhere. And on the way out of Mr. Robson's office, he took a load of biscuits, he took cigarettes and a lighter from that had been confiscated. And that was this was like probably the worst decision Alec could have made was to take them. Because then obviously that all led to Judy went in the storeroom, Alec followed her in, closed the door, Judy got a fright, and that's when all the white spirits spilled
on the floor.
Yeah, and they were having a conversation about the two of them. And you know, Judy said that she thought most of the time...
Well, he was opening up to her. He was telling her how he felt. You know, that's the soft side to him. You know,
and that was it. And Judy was telling him how she felt about him, and the fact that most of the time she thought he was all right, but he did scare her. And
that was... Well, he's intimidating, wasn't he?
Yeah, and he kissed her hand, and that's... Yeah. That, when he kisses her hand, that's an uncomfortable scene to watch. Was it an uncomfortable scene to film?
It was an uncomfortable scene to film.
Right, okay.
It was, yeah. It's just because the palm of someone's hand, it's just such an unnatural thing to do.
Yeah.
you know. And I was like, "You sure?" And he's like, "Yeah." And I can't remember who was directing that then. Was it Paul Annette or I can't remember. Anywho, yeah. So, yeah, that was just really strange. I'd never like. I mean, because when you're playing characters and you do things, you kind of have to relate to it in some way,
Yeah.
you know. And I couldn't relate to that. I was just like, that just doesn't look. That's just not natural. But I've got to make it look natural. That's my job. I'm an actor, you
Yeah.
know. So, however it looked, I suppose.
Yeah. And then Wayne came looking for Judy. He went in the cupboard, and this is the bit where Judy said there was times when Alec scared her because Alec grabbed her, put his hand over her mouth so she couldn't say anything. All that. Wayne couldn't see it, and Wayne locked the cupboard then, so they were, from the outside. And then Alec lit a ciggy and dropped a match onto the white spirit, and that was, it went straight up, and they were locked in. Now the fire there, was there much health and safety at that time?
It was a lot of health and safety. It was
Right.
they had recreated that room in the studio,
Yeah.
and basically it was very controlled.
Right.
So although there was fire near you, it could be switched off like that.
Right.
So it and everything, you had to wear fireproof clothing and stuff like that, and be
Yeah.
rubbed down with special fireproof.
Right.
You know, whatever
Yeah.
fluid they put on at the time, it was yeah, it was exciting. It
Yeah.
was really out there. And then the scene basically when you had to climb out the window, you know, and I jumped down onto the stairs first. And I'm like, come on, you can do it, you
Yeah.
know. Realistically, I mean, she could have done it, but she happened to slip just at
Yeah.
the last moment, and then that's where it,
Yeah.
boom. So that scene was great. I mean, they built a whole scaffold all around the stairs and everything like that. So
Yeah.
it was all very well done.
Right.
It was all like eye-opening for me because I'd never seen anything like that
Yeah.
before. I never experienced stunts like that as
Did
such.
you have a stunt double as well, though?
Yeah, from what I can remember, there was a stunt double that dude had to
The
actually
jump,
run
maybe.
through the fire,
Right,
through the
okay.
flames,
Right.
out the window. And then they got me from the outside of the
Yeah.
window,
Right,
jumping
okay.
across. And then it was a case of, you know, really, really talking to me and saying, right, Tommy, are you sure you're able to do this? Are you sure you can? I mean, it's jump down, I can easily do it. Like, you know what I mean? So get out of the way, come on, I can do this. Get out of the way, move. Get out of the way, come on. Let's do the thing, let's go. And in case I broke an ankle or anything could happen, you know what I mean? So they were paranoid. It was intense, but very
Yeah, I can
exciting.
imagine. Yeah, now,
Very exciting.
obviously, in a lot of that storyline, you did work with Laura Sadler, and
An amazing actress.
that's what I was going to say. Like, I mean, what was she like to work
She
with?
was stunning. She was just a great talent to work with, and such an easy person to work across from as well. And such a lovely person, just in real life. She
Yeah.
was really, really nice from day one. She was very nice to me, whereas like when I found this when I first started Grangehill, it was kind of clicky. It was very
Right.
clicky, you know.
I
Like
get
when
you,
we
yeah.
go, we'd all stay in the canteen, you know, and be hanging out there at lunchtime and stuff. And it was very clicky, and you felt the vibe. But Laura was always open and always come and have a chat, and she was very nice and welcoming. And I just felt, wow. I
Yeah.
mean, I fancied her in real life as well as
Yeah.
on set, you know. You couldn't, there's nothing not to like about her. She
Yeah.
was amazing,
Yeah.
you know. So yeah, I mean, for me, it was an absolute pleasure and honor to work with her,
Yeah.
you know,
Yeah.
over
No.
them years.
Yeah.
It was
Okay.
truly.
No. Okay. So then that obviously, like, Judy fell and died, and it was all then that the next few episodes were all about sort of Alec and Wayne both trying to come to terms with what had happened, and they both had their own way. Alec was obviously became a lot withdrawn and stuff, and Wayne
Well, it
was
was my
just
fault. It was
Wayne,
Alex's fault, basically. In
and
Wayne's
Wayne
eyes,
was really angry.
you were the, and it was.
Yeah.
I mean, it was his fault. So he had that massive burden to deal with, you know.
And
I don't know how. I mean,
when
how
they
is
had
that
the
happening in real life?
they had the inquest, and the inquest said it was accidental death. And Alex still said, well, it was my fault.
Yeah.
But
Blatantly,
Wayne...
It was.
Because there'd been the thing where Ray had given Alex a job and Wayne kicked off again, give another punch in there and stuff. But then Wayne sort
Yeah,
of
but I mean,
starts...
at that point, I was like, take it. I just, like, I deserve it. Hit me, beat me up, you know, because, you know, that... I'd hate to have that burden. Do you know what I mean? That's... It was very tough. It was sad.
So then, Alec left that series. And as I say, you were only in six episodes. Was that your idea or was that a script decision?
Well, honestly, it was my idea.
Right.
It was my idea to leave at that stage. And that was for personal reasons.
Oh, right. Okay.
Anything. It was a case of, if I didn't get out now, I didn't want to ruin it.
Right. Okay. All right. Fair enough.
You know, I was, like I say, let's just say I was closer to my character than what people imagined.
Right. Okay.
No. I mean, it was nothing serious. Like, I mean, but at the time it felt like it was.
Right. Okay.
You
I get
know?
You.
So at the time it was a case of, I didn't want, say, the press to get hold of something and then it'd be a big woo-ha.
Yeah.
And I just was straight up and honest and said, look, this is the situation I'm in at the moment. Moving forward, what do you suggest? And I think you should write me out at this stage. And they said, well, thank you so much for telling us that and doing it early, and you know, and that's what they did. And it was a mutual decision, kind of saying, in that sense. When I explained my circumstances, they were like, brilliant. Well, nobody wants the embarrassment.
Yeah.
And even though it didn't get to that, but it was just in case. You know what I mean? So
Yes.
it was just, covering my own ass and covering, you know, the BBC's ass as well, kind of thing.
Okay. So is that why you were able to come back then, obviously, for the next series then?
Yeah, only for a small bit.
Yeah. Yeah, because it was all about...
You couldn't just finish it there. It had to have an ending. And that's, they brought me back then the next series and said, right, we'll write you out properly. We'll give you a proper send-off, let's say. And and that's what it was.
So that was all... Because obviously, at this point now, Alec is properly on the run. You know, he's gone missing. And
I remember playing when I was homeless at that time. I remember sitting across the road just up the road from the studios, basically out on the street, and the film crew went across the road and they left me sitting on some cardboard boxes and just a bit tatted up, you know. And I was sitting there, and the public were allowed to just carry on as normal, and they were kind of like hidden across the road, camera crew and everyone, and people were throwing me money. It was hilarious. I was actually getting... I was like, really? And I was like, oh my god. You know, so makeup done their job.
Double wages that day.
I didn't run after them and give them the money back. I'll just go filming this, you know.
I mean, like, by this point, Wayne had sort of forgiven Alice as well, hadn't he? And that's why Wayne was trying to find him. And he went looking for him a few times, but he kept getting sent away because Alec had told people in the hostel, if anyone comes looking for me, I'm not here, basically. Don't tell anyone.
Yeah.
But then Alec said to the guy in the end, look, tell him where I go to school, tell him where I am. Because if I go to school, no one will, they, I don't think anyone will want to see me, basically. And so eventually Wayne went to meet him, and basically Alec explains what his life is now, the fact that he was helping homeless people at this point, and he was staying in the hostel, and he was doing a course in social work as well. So he basically, as you say, you know, he turned his life around.
Yeah.
And that then, the school then had like a bit of a drive then to try and raise money for awareness of homeless charities.
Yeah.
And right, the whole storyline, I think, was done really, really well on that bit, because it was the first time Grangell had tackled homelessness for a kickoff.
Especially for a youngster as well.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And there's a really poignant line that Alec comes out with when he says to one of the other kids, don't ever think that it couldn't happen to you. You know, because as you say, it's for kids. And kids would see homeless people around and about and not think, oh, wow, if they got there or anything like that. And I just think it was so well done. The whole storyline was brilliant. And especially when it basically finished with that line, don't ever think it couldn't happen to you. Because
that was it. That was my.
They had
my send off. My
they had the big fundraising bonfire. But I don't know if you were in that episode. the one where Linford Christie turned up?
Yes, I was actually.
Oh, right,
I was
okay.
Because I met him.
Right, okay.
Yeah, I was. I remember meeting him. Yeah.
Right, okay. So maybe that
Yeah,
you were
yeah,
in.
yeah,
Yeah, okay.
I think I was in the background at that stage.
Right, okay. Okay, fair enough. So then that
Yeah,
was.
I remember that.
That was your sort of your time on Grange Hill over. But can I ask you, we've mentioned a couple of people there, but who were you sort of closest to or best friends with on the programme?
Well, in all fairness, I used to hang out with Peter Morton. He was good fun. And little John Hudson. John came and stayed with me for a short period as well.
Oh,
He came and stayed down in London with me. Yeah, that was fun. Who else? I mean, I kind of just floated around, really. I didn't really hang out, cling on to one particular person. I kind of just come in and do my thing and, kept myself to myself in a sense. But I got on well with Peter, I'll say, like little John and that little gang, Jonathan and all of them. They were good. Because when I turned 16, let's say, you weren't chaperoned anymore,
right?
Which was, and I love the chaperones. I used to love the chaperones. There were Joan, Sue, June.
Yeah,
they were amazing, and I was like their little cheeky chappy. You know, they'd tell me everything. It was brilliant. You know, I'd sit back. I'd say I hung out with the chaperones more than I hung out with cast or anyone else, you know. And I tended to hang out with the extras as well. I don't know why. And I still do that, even on film sets. I always go and sit and hang out with the extras.
Right.
I just find them less pretentious.
Right, okay. Brilliant.
There was a few. There was Ben Freeman as well. I mean, we used to hang out as well with Ben and who else? Oh, Kelly George, of course. Me and Kelly were like that. What am I talking about? Kelly George, me and him used to hang out all the time.
Yeah.
You know, anytime we were on the set together, we were hanging out off set. Even when I finished Grange Hill, we did a lot of stuff together. We even started a band with two lads out of Biker Grove.
Right.
And we named it Them and Us.
Right.
We had Peter Andre's manager and for a short period.
Can you remember which lads was it off the Biker Grove then?
I can't remember the names, to be honest with you. It's totally gone out of my head. But one, he used to play guitar the other guy used to sing. And they had me playing drums, and I never played drums in my life. So I was miming these drums, you know, in the background to be a musician. But I'd do the singing and get in with the singing, and I couldn't sing either, basically. But it was great fun. We toured a lot. We did a lot of stuff.
So you left Grange Hill. So was acting what you wanted to pursue then?
Well, when I left Grange Hill, like I said, there was stuff going on in my personal life that I needed to sort out first. It became quite exciting, let's say. I got it all sorted out eventually over about a year. It took about a year, year and a half. And once everything was all cleared up and good to go, I was like, right, what do I do now? And sitting there twiddling my thumbs, I had done an audition a year earlier through my old agent, because I was still with Rosemary Kennedy at the London Irish Youth Theatre at this stage. And she wasn't really doing anything for actors. I mean, they were kind of fizzled off now. It was just she had one or two little actors that were working. I kind of needed to move on with my career. I needed to do something. And so I just picked up the phone and I phoned up Gary Davies Casting. And I said, hi, Gary. I had a meeting with you before. And my name's Tommy Carey and blah, 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 blah. And I just started chatting. He's like, Tommy, he said, all right, great. I'm doing Breed of Heroes. Oh, no, sorry, Band of Brothers.
All right.
Band of Brothers. Can you do an American accent? And I was like, yeah, of course I can. I could do an American accent. He said, brilliant, great. Come down tomorrow, get the script, and or I'll send the script. Who's your agent? And I said, Rosemary Kennedy, the London Irish Youth Theatre. He said, right, come in for a meeting. We'll have a chat. So I brought him in my CV and my photos, because that's what you had at the time, you know, photo in your CV, not like everything nowadays. And so I handed him that, and he said, did a child type this up for you? And he just, I was like, what was that? Not the way it's meant to be. He's gone, it's very unprofessional. I was like, okay, don't know what to do now. And he said, have you got any, have you got an agent in mind that you'd like to be with? And I was like, yeah, funny that, Scott Marshall. And he said, oh, I know Scott. I know Scott very well, and Denise. And he said, he got on the phone straight away. And he said, hi, Denise. I've got a lovely young actor here, Thomas Carey. And I think I was changed my name to Tom at the time then.
Right.
Because I was starting fresh again.
Yeah.
And I'd like you to see him, have a meeting with him. He's really good. He's a good little talent. And he's got an impressive showreel. He's done Grange Hill, blah, 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 blah. And I was like, wow, how easy this can just you know, go from one to the other. And so I went down and I had the meeting, and they were like, right, yes, we'll take you on. That's great. We'll get you started right away. Get some photos, some new photos done, and we'll use these ones for now. And that was that. The next day, bang, I was getting auditions. I was like, wow, this happened so quickly.
Yeah.
And then I was just landing little roles after little roles here and there. And yeah, it was pretty amazing. I went on to I did a film, Conspiracy of Silence.
Right. Okay.
Landed that film, a nice lead role of Sean McLaughlin, Conspiracy of Silence.
Right.
And sorry, I'm a bit slow with the old brain. And that was a great little role, a nice little Irish role. And he was full of character. Once again, he was a violent, you know, misunderstood guy. I tended to get those kind of characters. I don't know why, but it was. yeah, and that was great. So that did that, and then I landed a Coca-Cola commercial.
Right.
And so what was meant to be 2 weeks' work turned out to be like 6 weeks' work because of the weather. It was terrible, as it did in the country.
Yeah.
You know, no surprise there. They should have gone and filmed it in Spain. And I was getting loads of commercials, and then I did my first proper theatre job. Well, my first proper theatre job was at the RSC down in the Barbican, but that was only a very small role. And then I landed my actual first, I will say, proper theatre job, which was at the Latchmere, which is, I think it's 501 now or something like that, in Battersea. And from there, it just kind of rocketed off. And then I hit a point where once again, it was just coming too much, because with acting you've got to do it 100%. You've got to be available all the time. And so holidays were out of the question, and everything was out of the question, because you have to be available. So I never really traveled, I never really did anything. And I did this play, and the other actors were, after we'd finished, invited me out to Greece. And I think I just, what was I, 17? 18, coming on 18. And I went out to Greece with them, and it was awesome.
Yeah.
My first time ever abroad, and first time especially abroad on my own.
Right, yeah.
So, yeah, that was a great experience. And these were fresh out of drama school actors, and they really inspired me, because they looked up to me because of my Grange Hill experience and the fact that I was a working actor still. I think I was still doing Grange Hill. I think I hadn't. That was just before the last, the last series. So yeah, I mean, it went up, and then it just dropped off. I kind of said I'd had enough of acting, a break, because it was just wrecking my head, kind of thing. It's weird. Actor does that to you.
Yeah.
It has that ability to build you up and just knock you straight back down again. Build you up again and knock you straight back down. It's very hard to stay on a nice even level. Yeah. And, you know.
So what did you do instead then?
I went on to do landscaping, started up my own business doing landscaping and stuff like that. I just wanted to do something completely different. So I did cocktail bartending for about 5 years. I did hard landscaping for a few years. And then I realized, what am I doing? I shouldn't be doing this. This is terrible. And then a friend of mine came to me and asked me, would I be interested in a part in a short film, Secret View, Secret Love, basically. French. C'est que bien, bien. Yeah, so so I was like, yeah, of course. And it was filmed on 35 mil. And it was so yes, we had to do the dubbing later on. But it was a great little film. It went to Cannes Film Festival.
All right, brilliant.
And so all of this process was happening. So I'd done the filming, and it was a year later that it'd gone to Cannes Film Festival, and I was like, they invited me out to Cannes to
Wow.
support the film. And I was like, wow. So what do I do? Do I just, because I'm doing landscaping or whatever, and I'm like, do I just do what I normally do, my routine of go to the pub and hang out with my mates or whatever? And,
Yeah.
or do I just book a ticket and go out to Cannes and just try something new? And it was really toying with my head, what do I do? What do I do? And I fucking just booked a ticket.
Yeah.
Right, I'm going to go to Cannes. So Friday, straight after work, straight home, got changed, threw the clothes into a bag, and off to Cannes, off to Nice. And on the flight out there, the director was like, I'm really sorry, look, you're not able to stay with me now, because the other people I'm staying with said, well, because it's all girls, they didn't want a boy in there. And I was like, oh, so you tell me this on the flight, so now I've got no kids. That's nice. That's brilliant. That's a great start to my weekend out here. Yeah. So where I was saying this out loud, one of the other passengers said, well, you can stay at mine. I was like, really? Where are you? I'm going to Cannes as well. I said, great, I'm staying at yours then. And then so then I went and stayed with them in Cannes. And we're still friends today. This
Wow.
was 20 years ago nearly.
Brilliant.
Yeah, it was a great weekend. I didn't even go and see the film. I gave my ticket to someone else to go and see it because I was just loving the whole experience of being in Cannes.
Brilliant.
And I loved it that much. I flew back on the Sunday and I worked throughout the week and booked another ticket and went back out the following Friday.
Brilliant.
And yeah, had another great weekend out there. And for me, it was more about networking than it was to see the film. The film did good. It won a few little awards and stuff like that. So that was great for Cherry Barrett, the director. But for me, it was more about the experience. And that from that point, then I had an epiphany of what the hell am I doing? I love this life. This is the life for me. I love the schmooze side of things. I just love the life. I love acting. And so right there and then I knew three roads down from where I lived was an agency called the Patrick Hambleton Management. And I'd heard that they drank in my local pub. So someone tipped me off when I was up in Angel. And it's about, say, if you were to walk it, it'd be about a 15-minute walk. Well, I ran it in less than 3 minutes. I heard he was in the pub and I ran down there and I put in the door. I said to the bar, looking for Patrick Hambleton Management. And he, Patrick Hambleton, and he pointed to behind me. And there was a chap, very nice, friendly chap, sitting there on his own with a glass of wine. And I said, sorry, I'm going to give up my friend. I said, look, I need to just look. And I went off in a big spiel about I'm an actor and I've lived down the road and I've given it up for a short while and I want to get back into acting and I've been highly recommended by you, blah, 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 and this, that, and other. And he's turned around and he said, wow, I really like your little speech you've given there. He said, but I'm not Patrick. He's my husband. And he said, I'm sure he'd be very glad to meet you like that. And I was like, fucking hell, speak my language. You're kidding me. I've just given you a whole spiel. And it's not even you. Can I do it again? Well, this is your testament to being an actor, isn't it? And then so he said, yeah, I'll pass the word on to Patrick for you. What's your name again? And I gave him my name, and he did. And Patrick called me, and he said, right, he said, come into the office. And he said, well, I'm not going to take you on myself. My partner will, not being his husband, his business partner, Carolyn. And so me and Carolyn sat down and chat, and then bang, I was back in the game again.
Brilliant.
And yes, they're my agency now still.
Obviously, you're acting, still acting now. So, have you got anything
Yeah.
coming up that you can tell us about?
Anything coming up? Not as such.
Brilliant.
Yeah, it's quiet at the moment, but as it always is, and then all of a sudden there's a bloody load of stuff that happens. But it's the industry's changed massively since back in the day. I mean, with self-taping and everything like that, which is fine. I'm totally adapted to it now. But you've got to. It's all about creating your own material now, as such, as opposed to. You've got to write your own bloody film now if anyone's going to take you seriously. So I have. I've written a short film that I was going to make this summer, but when you're doing stuff on a no budget, trying to get people all available at the same time, turns out to be quite hard, especially when you use the professional actors as well, because they get jobs and they're like, ah, not available anymore. But when I am, we'll do it then. And I'm writing a British gangster film as well at the moment. Currently doing those type of things. I did a film that premiered last September at the Venice Film Festival, The Hanging Sun. So I played a henchman, gangster in that. I wonder why. So I'm thinking if anyone's out there listening, you need a gangster or a henchman, I'm your man.
Brilliant,
I'd
brilliant.
really like to play a nice character one day, though.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, that kind of leads me into my next question, because we are coming towards the end of the interview. And I always ask the same few questions at the end, and they're all Grangeville related. So the first question here is, recently there's been talk of a Grangeville movie. Phil Redmond has written it. Sarah Sugarman's going to be directing it. What do you think of the idea of a Grangeville movie?
Yeah, I mean, if they're hitting topics like they hit back in the day, I mean, because I think after when my character left, it kind of went Disney-ified, and they weren't hitting the same sort of. It just went all soft. It went all a bit mushy, and it wasn't that attractive to watch. I wasn't really drawn to it anymore in any way, really. So if they were to hit the same issues in a modern day with what's going on as far as drugs, weapons, gangs, lifestyle, stuff like that, that's happening in rife still to this day, I'd be very interested to see it. And I think, yeah, bring it on. That'd be great,
Brilliant.
because kids need something to relate to,
Yeah.
kids, because there isn't enough stuff that doesn't have to have so much violence. It just has to, show, I don't know, show it, and it doesn't have to be graphic or anything,
Yeah.
but you
Yeah.
get the idea,
Yeah.
as long as it's hitting certain things, like, there's a lot of depression nowadays with social media and bullying and all that sort of trolls, that's the one.
Right.
And it's very sad, how social media has such an impact on young people's lives.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
How it's re literally taken over their lives to the point of what's real anymore,
And okay.
so yeah, I'm all for I'd be yeah I'm all for that. That has to be part of
Brilliant.
it for me.
Okay. And yeah, so if you were asked, would we see a return of Alec Jones?
I'd return. I'd definitely return. Yeah,
Brilliant.
why not? Why not? That'd be
Brilliant.
fun.
Yeah, okay.
Fun to do.
Okay. So you said earlier on that you used to watch Grangeville, you got home from school to watch it. So other than Alec Jones, who was your favorite character in Grangeville?
It's a tough one, isn't it? I mean, it was the next. I mean, they were the year above my year. And now you get hitting me with names, and I can't remember the
So there was
names.
the likes
That,
of the, do you mean like the likes of Dennis,
yeah, it was
Arnie,
that year
people
that
like
because
that?
they were the year that, I mean, I would have been watching.
Right.
And so when I went in for the read through, and I'd see them guys, because the
Yeah.
people in my year, well, I didn't really know them that well because they were only just starting out themselves, kind of thing. So yeah, it was them guys, and yeah, I was come. I mean, I'm terrible with names anyway at the best of time, but as opposed to a favorite character, I don't think I had a favorite
Right, okay.
character as such. I kind of idolized the whole
Okay.
idea of it.
Cool.
Because I could, I just It was the closest thing on TV that you could relate to at my age at the time.
Okay.
You know, there was nothing else really you could relate. 4.2 children, I think, about the next thing.
Okay. And if you couldn't have played Alec, which other character would you like to have played?
I would have to be Wayne, wouldn't
Brilliant. Brilliant.
Easily, yeah. I have to rival him now.
Yeah,
But
okay.
yeah, I mean, I think for me at that time, it was the hard boy. Any sort of hard boy, I was always the hard boy, and I really liked playing those characters. So yeah, so it would have been definitely Wayne. And yeah, I would have had a bash at Ian Robert, what's Sean's
Sean,
character as well,
yeah.
would have had a go at that.
Can you
I
do the
reckon
Scottish accents?
I wouldn't have been able to do the Scottish accent with him, but
Brilliant.
I would have given it a go anyway. I would have done an Irish, I could have done an Irish one, coming from
Yeah.
Ireland. Yeah.
Excellent. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, then the last question, Tommy, is why do you think there's still such affection for Grange Hill?
Because of the topics it hit. Because of how it people could relate to it in so many ways. Especially youngsters, even teachers. I mean, teachers were watching it as well. They could relate to it as well. It was entertaining as well as you know, personal, you see. So yeah, I mean, it was educational. Yeah, I mean, like I said, it was the only thing that I could watch on TV at that age that I could relate to, and you know, you could look at and say, you know, I've been through that, or I'm going through that, you know. And so, like, even like a teacher could be watching it and say, you know, one of my pupils is going through that, you know, because the teachers had their own issues, they had their own storylines as well, all of them, you know. We forget it's not all about the pupils. You know, they had their own personal lives as well, within the program, kind of, you know, not their personal, but within the program. Yeah, so yeah, it had a massive audience, young and old,
Yeah, that
and
really
that's what
did,
made
yeah.
it so popular.
Yeah,
Yeah.
brilliant. Okay. Well, Tommy, thank you so much for coming on. It's been really interesting. So it's been great listening to your take and your experiences on quite a misunderstood, very interesting character that we had in Grange Hill there. So thank you so much
Yeah.
for coming on. It's
Well,
been
thank
great.
you very so much for having me.
Not at all.
I've really really enjoyed it. It's brought back some old memories, and yeah.
Brilliant.
Well, yeah, I'm been an honor. Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you.
Yeah, look forward to I've not looked forward to hearing it.
Brilliant. Oh, well, thanks again. And to anyone that's listening,
Yeah.
I'll
Yeah.
speak to you next time. Cheers. Thanks. Bye bye.